Hello, everyone. Good evening. How are you doing? It's, what is it, Tuesday night? I don't know what it is, but the last 3 weeks in a row, I've felt like every day is Friday. I don't know why. I don't get it. I don't understand. But that's my life. So it feels like an Aloha Friday to me. Now, I'm once again trying some brand new stuff, so you guys are my guinea pigs. Let me know how the audio quality is. Let me know if you can hear me. And also, I am broadcasting live out to Podbean tonight as well. Podbean is where you can hear my podcast, which this show airs on the podcast the next day. But I've figured out how to make the podcast live. And so nobody's joining us yet. But so I've got a lot of different things going on. So as usual, making some tweaks. April says, looks, sounds good. Thank you, April. How are you doing? As usual, let me know where you are calling in from or calling in from. Well, that was a flashback. Let me know where you are listening in from. And I'd love to hear from you. And I got a couple of things on my mind tonight. Maybe there's some things on your mind that we can talk about. I'm also trying something new this week. Many of you heard it yesterday, but you didn't hear it today because I had some technical issues. But I'm doing a show in the morning now at 9 a.m., and it's called JMAC Show Prep. And all it is I'm inviting you guys into my process as I go through the news stories, as I go through my news feed, as I read through the stories. It will be available after the fact, so you don't have to listen in live. But I hope you'll check it out and let me know what you think. So 9 a.m. Monday through Friday. I know, crazy, right? 9 a.m. Monday through Friday, Mountain Standard Time. It'll be available on all of the platforms, YouTube, Facebook. I can't think tonight. In fact, tonight, I just want to share this with you because I like sharing with you my issues. And I want to get your feedback on it. I have in the last 5 or 6 months. Hey, David and Mary Jane and Sandy, good to see you. Over the last, I'm going to say 5 to 7 months, I have been in a fog mentally. Like, I can't recall things quickly. I'm doing really ridiculous things. And this is all come on very quickly. I can't find my words as quickly as I used to. And as you can imagine, doing this type of show or podcast, that's something that you absolutely have to be able to do. And I'm doing things that I would never, ever do before. April says happens with age. I know, but this has all happened in 1 year. I was hoping for a little bit more gradual decline. And I'll share with you some of the things that have happened to me. So things that I've never, ever done in my life. Many of you know I host other podcasts for part of my job. So I've hired myself out to anybody who wants to start a podcast and need a professional host. So right now I'm hosting 8 other podcasts. Now I haven't shared these with you because they are business podcasts, and you know, I guess if you want to listen to them, you can. There's one on food trucks. It's a Better Way to Food Truck podcast. There's one with a personal injury attorney in Virginia. There's one out of India dealing with SaaS applications. There's one where I interview doctors. But so the reason I tell you this is something that I do throughout the day, along with a couple of the other jobs that I have. And so I have to schedule them and get them all done. And I've done this over and over again. And you know I've been in radio for 20 years. So the other day, I'm doing an interview. It's a fantastic interview. I close up. I'm real excited to send it to the client. And I look up, and I had forgotten to hit record. Are you kidding me? I had forgotten to hit record. So the whole thing was a bust. Now, fortunately, the client was okay. But look, I don't do those kind of things. Last night, before I went to bed, I have insomnia, so I take some sleep medication. And the pill that they give me is too big, so I have to cut it up. So last night I cut it up, and about 3 a.m. I'm sitting here in my office saying, you know, why hasn't this kicked in? I never took it. These types of things are happening to me, and I just don't feel like I am myself. I feel like there's pressure on the front of my skull, on my brain. My wife said maybe it's a sinus infection. I have a theory about what it is. Now, I am going to see the doctor about it. It's become that bad, and it's come upon me so quickly that I am legitimately concerned. But here's a theory that I have. And I know we all became medical professionals during COVID, but my wife and I both believe, and I have nothing to back this up, but we both believe that we got COVID early on, before most everybody else did. In February of 2020, we went to Las Vegas with our kids. It was kind of our last hurrah vacation before the campaign. So we went to Vegas, and when we came home, my wife and I were sicker than I've ever been before. And it matches all of the descriptions of COVID. But at that point, we hadn't even heard of COVID. And so I haven't gone around telling people I had COVID, because it drives me crazy when people do that. They're like, oh yeah, I had COVID. And I'm like, really? Did you get tested? Or, you know, no, I just know I did. And I'm doing the same thing, right? But I haven't shared it with you. And the only reason I'm sharing it with you now is because I'm wondering if this is long COVID. I have some of the other symptoms. Shortness of breath, some of those other issues. So I'm wondering if that's what it is. I'm hoping that that's what it is. I don't really know. But if you find that I'm struggling a little bit more for words recently, that's what this is. And I'm not sure what to do about it. But I'm now making notes for myself to remind myself about things. I've put checklists up for when I host these podcasts. Things that I've never had to do before. And again, I fully expected over the years that this would creep in, but not in just the last 6 months. So I don't know if you guys have experienced anything like that. If any of you have long COVID, let me know what you think. Just really strange, really strange. So I'm going to go to the doctor. I'll let you guys know, let you know what happens. Another thing on my list tonight, and you may be wondering, why is this a question that I'm asking? Is the hiring crisis a fraud? You're probably like, J-Mac, why are you asking that question? Well, you know I always have a reason to ask the question. The reason is because this is now something going around the social media. This is the next conspiracy theory. And that is for some reason, employers are perpetuating a myth that they can't find good people. And they're doing this, and what I can't understand, and I've tried to interact with some of these people, I can't understand why they feel this way, with one exception. There's some guy down in Florida who conducted his own research study. He says he applied for 60 different jobs. He only got one callback, and that callback, they only offered him part-time work. Now, I don't know anything about this guy or his research, or if he's done past research, or if this has been verified. I also don't know if he's hireable. And I know for a fact that we can't take a one study or one perspective and cast the entire country with it. But what I know is from my personal experience and from the people I know, the hiring crisis is very real. Very real. And but what I'm trying to get to the bottom of from these people, and maybe you can help me out, maybe you've heard things I don't know, what would be the possible motive of businesses getting together, again, all businesses getting together and saying that there is a hiring crisis. Because I can't see how it benefits them. And that's what I'm trying to figure out. How does it benefit them? See, what's happening is if you look at wages nationally, wages are going up. And the reason they're going up is because employers are raising their wages so that they can hire. So what possible benefit does an employer have to perpetuate this myth? But it's all over TikTok. I've seen it on Facebook now. I've just talking to people. They're like, oh, this whole hiring thing is a fraud. And I just don't understand. I just don't understand. I can tell you, I know, for example, I don't know if he's on yet tonight. He might not be, but Chris Larson, who normally joins us on the show, I know that his business is facing a hiring crisis. And I know that he works and represents a whole group of businesses in his industry. And their primary topic of conversation every single time they meet every week is about the hiring crisis and what are they going to do. And I know that my son, now this is all anecdotal, right? This is all anecdotal, but this is what I have and what I have experienced. And this is in Utah, by the way. Utah unemployment is much lower than other places in the country. My son, who works at a pizza restaurant, they can't hire. They can't find people. They just can't. My daughter, same thing. I mean, just most of the people that I know who are in business, they are having a very hard time hiring. So again, I just was wondering from any of you, if you've seen anything, if you have any clues about why it is that businesses, evil businesses, would somehow want to perpetuate the myth that there is a hiring crisis. How does that benefit employers? That's what I don't understand. So let me know what you think about that. You guys are kind of quiet on the subject. And that's okay. I do have a couple of other things on my list tonight as well. But I am just curious, and I should have got Chris on before. We'll talk to him in a bit. April says, my oldest can't find a job. Employers aren't following up. Now, this is another, I'm curious, April, what type of work is this? Entry-level work? What type of work is it? Because it's not every industry that's facing a hiring crisis. And again, I don't know, I'll give you, this is not anything against your oldest. April says it's food service. I used to work with a private investigator. I don't know if you guys know this part of my history, but there are a few jobs that I haven't done. This was a running joke on the browser when I was on KSL with Amy Iverson. We put together a list of all the jobs that I've ever done, and there are a few jobs that I haven't done. And so when I was in Vegas, I was looking for work, and I wanted to get into mystery shopping. And it turns out in Las Vegas, if you want to be a mystery shopper, you have to be or work for a private investigator. So I contacted a private investigator, and we became good friends, and I ended up running his office, and I ended up going out and working as a private investigator. We used to mystery shop the casinos. We would also do surveillance on individuals for workers' compensation claims. And we would also do background checks for people, for businesses. So, you know, in-depth background checks. So, like, the background check when you're hiring an executive is very different than when you're hiring a frontline employee. So we would go out and knock doors to do executive background checks. We would talk to neighbors. We would talk to all kinds of people. Why do I tell you this whole story? I tell you this because we would have people come in and they would ask us to do a background check on themselves. And this was a concept I had never heard of. They'd literally come in and they'd say, I want you to do a background check on me. And I'm like, what? Why would you want to do that? And they said, because I have interviewed hundreds of times and I can't get the job. And so I'm trying to figure out what it is that is causing people not to hire me. Now, I can tell you that I knew within 10 minutes of meeting the individual why they weren't getting hired. And it wasn't because of anything in their background. It was because how they dressed. It was because of their hygiene. It was because of the way they talked. They did not present an air of confidence. They presented an air not submissiveness, that's not the word I'm looking for, but they just didn't seem confident. And in every one of those cases, I'm like, look, if I was interviewing you, and we tried to tell these people this, if I was interviewing you, then I would be concerned, because you don't come off as somebody that would, you know, be able to do this. I'm not saying that that's the situation with you, April. I'm just saying that it's very hard to compare anecdotal situations with a national situation. Let's see. Kevin says, KFC top of 2100 shut down due to lack of employees. My employer is more concerned with vaccination mandates. Kevin also says, no opinion either way, but if the mandate hold up and people and employment due to end their employment due to their convictions, it will get real messy. April says, LOL, you're fine. So am I wrong, first of all, that the Biden mandate has never been put in place? Am I wrong about that? He brought it up. The states complained, but as far as I know, the Biden mandate is not in place. Is it in place? Have I been in such a fog that I've missed it? So any mandates are mandates that are either put on by the state or put on by the employer. And Kevin, I'm not saying you suggested either way, but I hear people complaining about the Biden mandate, but I don't think it's in play unless it's for federal or for the military. But that is an unfortunate side effect of businesses wanting their customers or their employees to be vaccinated. However, we don't know what those numbers are. My feeling is that this is all somehow. Kevin says you are correct. Yeah, that's what I thought. My feeling is that this can't last. Now, I've shared with you the Great Resignation. The Great Resignation is different than the hiring crisis. The Great Resignation, and we did a deep dive on this about a month ago. The Great Resignation is people leaving their current job for other jobs. It's not people just quitting, and it's not people just not going back to work. So there's two things going on: the Great Resignation and the hiring crisis. The Great Resignation is that normally about 20% or so of the workforce wants to quit their job and find another job. But for some reason, after the pandemic, that number has gone up into the 60-65% range. And it's been described, what I heard it best described as that the pandemic created a life-altering experience for most Americans. And what that means is that, you know, most people are humming along. They, you know, they don't hate their job. They don't love it, but they're not necessarily looking for work. And then some type of crisis comes upon them in their family. It could be a health issue. It could be some other type of tragedy, a natural disaster. It could be a financial problem. And what that does is it causes people to rethink their priorities. And so where they were fine with their job and their destination before, now this crisis that they had in their individual life has made them think, man, do I want to live out my life doing this? Maybe I want to pursue my dreams. Maybe I want to try something different. And at any moment in time, there's a certain percentage of the population going through this type of life-altering moment. But the pandemic seems to have caused us all to do that. And so now you have upwards of 60% of Americans saying, man, I used to be happy at this job, but I'm not anymore. Life is too precious. Life is too short. I'm going to go shop around. I'm going to chase my dreams. I'm going to go do that thing that I always said I would do and never did. And so that's the great resignation. The hiring crisis is a situation where employers who have had jobs that were filled before the pandemic, now they can't get those jobs to be filled after the pandemic. And the thought was, at first, initially, that it was because of the increased unemployment benefits, and I'm sure that was part of it. But now we're beyond that, and it keeps going, and it keeps going. Now, it could be that the pandemic had that life-changing effect on people as well, and so they're not wanting to take those jobs. I don't know. I think it also has to do with it. Employers have changed. And so they're not offering the same type of work, or the scheduler is different or something like that. But you put it all together and you have the great resignation and you have a hiring crisis, neither of which are a fraud, in my opinion, and based upon the numbers that I'm seeing. Again, I can't find any reason in the world why employers would want to send the message that they can't find good people. What is their benefit of that? Or they can't find any people. April says, well, now my oldest is moving into my newly finished basement with his wife to go back to college. Neaters can suck it. Oh, does that mean no more pies, April? That is devastating. That is devastating. Kevin says, if the market shifts due to the pandemic and unemployment remains low, I hope that it's not the mom and pop businesses getting thinned as people too big businesses, Walmart, Amazon, etc. Well, goodness. You hear my Alexa? I got to fix that. I live in the Apple ecosphere, but I have an Alexa because my podcasts, I've been testing my podcast availability on Alexa. And so now, let me see if I can turn that down. Here, just interrupting the show. All right. Okay, that's turned down. Let's see, other comments. April says, my daughter-in-law now works for Grand America as a pastry chef. Okay, so you still have access to pastries and goodness, so... all things are not lost. Now, I will tell you, my other daughter, who is, many of you know, she was caught in the hurricane it's just failing me here in New Orleans. And, she has moved back home. She's in the basement and she's been out looking for work and she has been surprised that she's not getting as many calls back as she thought. So it's this interesting thing, you know, I'm hearing from employers and people I know who are in the business world saying we can't find work. We see that in the numbers. And then we're hearing from people like April about her oldest and my daughter who are like, you'd think that the doors are getting, knocked down and, for employees, and it's just not. I think part of the problem is my daughter is overqualified now for most of the work that she's applying for. And she asked me, she's like, well, what does that have to do anything? You know, I'll take any job. And I said, well, the perspective is that if you're overqualified, you're just looking for work to pay the bills. And the moment you find something you're qualified for, you're going to be out. That's how I always treated, you know, when I was in the pizza business and someone would come in and they had an impressive resume and I totally understood they wanted to work, but it was always a concern of like, I'm going to hire you. I'm going to train you. And meanwhile, you're going to keep applying for jobs you're qualified for. And that means eventually the money and time and investment that we've spent in training you is going to be wasted. And that is a consideration that many employers have. And if you've never hired, you might not understand that side of the equation. So at any rate, my belief, the hiring crisis is not a fraud. I do not believe or understand why employers would do that. That doesn't mean that everybody can just go out and find a job, though. Anyway, that's my thought for you tonight on that. I did have, this one's just kind of fun. Mike Lindell, the pillow guy, announces the next event, whereupon he claims Trump will be resurrected or anointed or whatever. Anything to do, anything to sell pillows. Mike, my pillow guy's CEO, Mike Lindell, has announced a 3-day marathon broadcast to prepare the country for the 2020 presidential election to be overturned. Oh, Mike. Let's see what he has to say. He says this is absolutely the biggest cover-up for the biggest crime in history. Oh, he's talking to Steve Bannon here. He says, I cannot wait to drop this Supreme Court case the Tuesday at 9 a.m. before Thanksgiving. And the whole world is going to be watching all this unfold over Thanksgiving. Lindell predicted that up to 30 state attorneys would join his lawsuit, claiming that the election was stolen from former President Donald Trump. He says, I really believe it will be 9-0 that they will at least look at it, he said. And they're going to take it down. You don't have 9-0 that they will at least look at it, Mike, just so you know. All 9 justices do not vote on whether or not each case will be heard. I think it's only 3 of them, just so you know. Kevin says, like Jehovah's Witnesses predicting Armageddon. Don't worry, they won't read this. by the way, I've looked at all of Mike's evidence, his quote evidence, and there's nothing there. There's nothing to see there. And in fact, we can go over here to Wisconsin. And did you know Wisconsin was doing an audit? Did you know this? They were doing an election audit. Well, let's see what they found. Did they find any fraud? Let's check and see. Wisconsin audit finds elections are safe and secure. I'm shocked, truly shocked. A highly anticipated nonpartisan audit of the 2020 presidential election in Wisconsin did not identify any widespread fraud in the battleground state, which a key Republican legislative leader said shows that the state's elections are safe and secure. So why I've told you, I'm not against the audits. I have no problem. Bring it on. Bring it on. If we find election fraud, then my goodness, let's fix it. But, where is the accountability to he who is claiming that the election was stolen when no evidence ever comes forth? Where is that accountability? Where is it? I just do not get it. Where is it? Anybody? Anyone? So, there you go. Read some more of that story. This is ABC News. I don't know if you can trust ABC News. This is a highly anticipated nonpartisan audit of the 2020 presidential election in Wisconsin. Did not identify any widespread fraud in the battleground state. The report from the Nonpartisan Legislative Audit Bureau did make dozens of recommendations on how the state might improve its elections. It also determined that dozens of voting machines it reviewed worked correctly. Some conservatives have called for reviews of all voting machines. In the meantime, my friends, I have a solution here. And I presented this yesterday morning. I want to present it to you. I have a solution to voter ID. I have a solution to mail-in ballots to anybody who still thinks that they're highly, highly changeable or highly likely of fraud. There's an easy solution. And we're seeing that solution in other places all over the internet. Now, I don't want online voting. I don't want online voting. I don't want it to go to that point. I like having a paper record next to a digital record. I really like that. And the mail-in ballot gives you that, and the walk-in ballot gives you that. But there are still those who are concerned, even though the mail-in ballot has a barcode on it that has to match the voter record, and there's a barcode on the envelope that has to match the voter record, and there's a signature verification, and there is no evidence anywhere of more than a handful of any mail-in ballots being abused, to shore this up and to deal with voter ID, which so many Republicans are in favor of, and I'm in favor of it if it can be done in such a way that everybody can access it, regardless of their socioeconomic conditions. I'm in favor of shoring it up. And to me, the answer is sitting right in front of us. And that is what happens when you go to log in somewhere now. There's so many places where I go to log in, my banking app, somewhere else. What do they use? They use two-step verification, right? So you log in, that's your first step, that's your password. And then they send me a text message with a code in it. And I have to enter in that code. And that code is my second verification. Now, to me, on top of the mail-in ballots, we can have another verification. And that verification could be attained online or via the phone. And to me, here's how it works. You get your mail-in ballot, and the mail-in ballot says you need to fill it out. You need to sign it. You need to sign the envelope. So those verifications are already there. And you need to go online or pick up the phone and call and get your voter verification number, whatever we call it. We call it some fancy number. And in order to get that number, you have to read the ID number on the ballot. And you have to relay some form of information. I don't want it to be like Social Security number or something like that. But when you register to vote, you could provide some type of keyword or something like that. You would have to provide some verification of who you are. Then you are provided with a number. That number must be entered in on your mail-in ballot. Now we've got checks and balances and systems all over the place. What do you think? And you could have it verified with the blockchain if you want. To me, and that way, anybody with a phone, anybody with a landline, anybody with the internet, they can all get their voter ID number, and then they can still get their mail-in ballot. And all of those things have to match up. And then when that ballot comes in, it's scanned for the barcode and it's scanned for the second authentication number, which has to be obtained by you during the process. What do you think? Kevin says this topic will continue through 2024. It's now Trump's platform and litmus test. I agree with you. Kevin says, BRB going to buy stock in Walmart burner phones. That will be the next conspiracy theory. Yeah. Well, it won't matter what you call in on. It has to be some, you know, some pin, like a pin that you set up. Like, it could be as simple as that. So when you register to vote, you provide a pin. And then when you get your mail-in ballot, you got to call the 800 number, and you've got to give the code on the mail-in ballot, and you've got to provide the PIN. And when you do that, you'll be given a voter ID number, and you enter that onto the ballot. Now we've got all kinds of verifications going in. What do you think? To me, it solves the issue and controversy around voter ID. It solves everything. Simple. Thoughts, comments? Do you like it? Do you hate it? What do you think? And by the way, I'm getting a new microphone tomorrow. So the next time I come on, it might we might be troubleshooting again. But I'm hoping to resolve some of the audio issues that I've had. But does the audio sound okay to you guys tonight? I have a new soundboard that I'm using tonight. And some of the things I really like about it, some of the things that I don't. All right, my friends, that's all that I had planned for you tonight. It was a simple night. We've only been going for 40 minutes, and that's why I put Ask Me Anything at the end of the the list of things that I wanted to talk about. So the floor is open. What would you like to talk to me about? Oh, I also stumbled across a way to take live calls to go throw back to the old-timey radio. I know stations still do this, to take live calls. Is that something any of you would be interested in? David says, complicated way to vote. Is it really that complicated to just dial a phone number and enter a number? I mean, man, if it secured up our system, not that our system is not secure. I mean, we are not finding major issues. Yes, there are cases where dead people have voted. That's happened every year. Yes, there are cases where somebody has moved and their ballot went to their old address and the person at that address said, I think I'm going to vote twice. But these are situations that happen in handfuls, not in widespread numbers and not in any level to justify some type of election fraud. To me, it's so simple. You just get your ballot. There's a phone number on it. You dial it. You give them the number on the ballot and your PIN. Boom. There's your number. You write it in. It adds all of 5 minutes. You can still vote in your home. And it adds that extra level of security. Because honestly, if somebody... So, I mean, the perfect example, if somebody gets a ballot at the house and it's from the previous resident and they want to fill it out, well, how are they going to get that voter ID number? If that person is dead and that ballot comes in, how are they going to get that voter ID number? They're not going to be able to do it. Let's see. Kevin says, does active military have access to phones? No lag like the mail-ins. That's where most of the conspiracy came from. We're winning. Wait a minute. Now we're not. I know, David, but that's also easily explained. You know, that only adds up if you're not looking for the truth. Yes, military has access to phones, and it would be very simple to set up a military website to do this. Like I said, it could be done online. We know military has access to the internet. It could be done online, and it could be done via the phone. The reason, and we've talked about this over and over again, that Trump was ahead before everyone went to bed is because Trump convinced all of his people to vote in person. And so they hadn't started counting the mail-in ballots. And because of Trump, the mail-in ballots overwhelmingly supported Biden. Not because of fraud, but because Trump scared everybody, all of his supporters, into voting in person. And I've shared with you studies in the past that show prior to Trump's claims, mail-in ballots didn't support one side or the other. It's only when you had some guy claiming that they were fraudulent and a terrible system with no evidence to support the claim that you got this huge disparity of in-person ballots and mail-in ballots. So that wasn't a function of some problem with mail-in ballots. That was a function of the commander-in-chief instilling doubt, knowing that he had a chance of losing and wanting to preempt that chance. And many states have already addressed that issue, Kent, because what they had were laws in the past that said you can't start voting ballots until you can't start counting ballots until the day of the election. Well, that seems strange. Why is that? So a lot of states have said we can start counting mail-in ballots much earlier. And that solves a lot of the problem. So, you know, I know people want a definitive decision on election day, but that's really fairly new. And, you know, which would you rather have, a decision on election day or absolute clarity and security in the election outcome? It's like, we become so accustomed to the media deciding who wins before the votes are finished and before the counting has begun. And, I just think that those are not a good enough reason to not look at some of these other systems. Maybe it takes another day. Maybe it takes another week. I don't think it will, because you can start counting the mail-in ballots early. And that's what a lot of the states are going to do. Let's see. Kathy says, how would we push to enact this type of verification method? Well, I think that we need election officials to embrace it. We need to start sharing it with other people, to start getting feedback. I don't know if it's flawed. I don't know what the apparent loopholes are or problems with it. That's why I'm presenting it to you as an idea. And, good ideas have their own momentum. And I'm sure I'm not the only one who's had this idea. I hope. I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one. But my experience with the political parties is they don't really want to solve the issue. The Republicans want to continue to say that we can't have security in elections till we have voter ID. And the left wants to continually say that voter ID is racist. Neither thing is true. Hang on. Had to sneeze there. okay. But they love that. They love those two positions because they can fundraise on those two positions. If they were trying to solve the problem, they'd get together in a room and say, okay, how do we do this? And this to me is an obvious solution. Obvious. Davis says, good point. Let's see. Heather says, didn't Trump win when mail-in ballots were used? It's just funny that they weren't a problem then and all of a sudden they were a problem. So Heather, I'll try and be fair on that point. There were more mail-in ballots in the 2020 election than in history, than ever before. So it would not be fair to say that Trump won in the same type of situation in 2016 as he did in 2020. That wouldn't be fair, because many states went from having to opt in for a mail-in ballot to sending a mail-in ballot to everyone. In so many states, you would have to request absentee and you'd have to have a reason to do that. In Utah, everybody gets a ballot. We've been doing that for 10 years. I love it. But in a lot of other states, that's not the case. And in fact, in Philadelphia, many believe it was against, and I believe it was against the Constitution of the state of Philadelphia for them to issue a no request mail-in ballots to everyone. And the courts basically agreed with that. But the problem is Trump and the Republicans didn't bring their lawsuit against this legislative decision until after the election, almost 18 months later. And so the courts ruled, they used a ruling called latches. I don't know if you've heard of that before, but it means that when it comes to something like election laws, you have to bring your lawsuit in a timely manner. And if you don't, you lose the right to challenge. So, and certainly if you wait until after the election, and many of your people, your Republicans who were reelected using that ballot method, they didn't contest. And so just to be fair, based upon that claim, 2020, more mail-in ballots than ever in history, because we were in a pandemic. And so it wasn't the same. That's all I'll say about that. Let's see. Kevin says, I'm going to commit voter fraud and vote for Chris Stewart 3 times. Please don't vote for Chris Stewart even one time. I am so mad at him right now. I am mad enough that if I felt like there was any possibility, I would run against him. I am mad. I believe his actions right now are killing this country and killing people. So, you probably knew that, and that's why you brought up Chris Stewart. You're just trying to get a rise out of me. That's what's happening here. Anything else you guys want to talk about or any other comments on what we've brought up tonight? I guess because of this brain fog that I've got, I just didn't have a lot. Let me check my other stories here and see what there was anything else. There might have been a couple other things. We talked about the MyPillow guy. Joe Manchin says he admits he is a lost politician. He says, I don't know where the hell I belong. Gee, that sounds familiar. Tammy says, I'm over Chris Stewart. At least we won't run into him at a Jazz game. Yeah, that's true. That is absolutely true. And I have to tell you, look, when I was thinking about running for Congress, I made a trip back to Washington, D.C., and all of our representatives were very good to me. They all took time to sit down with me, Chris Stewart included. He was very kind. He told me to my face, he says, you're not my first choice. I'm trying to get somebody else to run for the 4th District. He said, but if they won't run, then I will support you. So he was very kind, and I know people that work on his staff, and, you know, at the time, I really, really didn't have any reason to, you know, to be that upset with him or to not support him. His statements recently about the CDC flip-flopping and some of this election stuff, I'm going to tell you straight up, I think he sold his soul. And I think just like so many Republicans, as has been brought up tonight, people are making a calculated choice. If I want to keep my job and keep my power, I have to at least be silent about election fraud or carry the water for election fraud. And I have to downplay the virus and downplay masks and downplay the science. If I don't do those things, I will lose my job. So literally what they're saying is, if I don't perpetuate lies that kill people and perpetuate lies that kill people's faith in our democracy. So what are we talking about? The death of the nation and the death of people. And you're deciding to take your job over those two things. Now, it's one thing when you're fighting for a tax cut or fighting against a socialized program or government overreach or something like that. It's entirely another when you have sold your soul and people will die and our nation will die. David says, have you picked a new home yet? David, great question. Still taking a really strong look at the United Utah Party. They are not where I think that they could and should be. They're great people. They have a great platform. I think that what they really need is some really good leadership. Now, I'm not saying I'm the person to provide that leadership. But yes, I've considered that. I've considered just going forward as an independent. I'll be honest with you guys. I've not ruled out some political action in the future. Maybe running again. I've got all cards on the table right now, and we'll just have to wait and see and wait what happens. But David, I know you guys have been looking for a home as well, and I think you found a home, and I think that's awesome. And you're not alone, and I'm here with you. So still deciding, still searching. Gotta get over this brain fog, though. I just don't. It's really impacting my life right now. If you're joining us late, I shared with everybody early in the show, for the last 4 or 5 months, I've just felt like I'm in a fog every moment of the day. my recall is not what it was. I'm doing things that, you know, this is where I thought I'd be when I was a lot older, and it's all come upon me in the last 5 or 6 months. I think it might be long haul COVID. I'm going to go to a doctor and find out, but it's just making it hard for me to get things done. I find myself sitting just staring at screens for a long, long time. Not even wondering, you know, everybody's done this. Like you walk in a room and you're like, why was I here? Well, like I'll bring up a website or I'll go and I'll open a new window in Google because I'm going to search for something. And I'll just sit there staring at the new window. Not trying to think of what I was looking for. Not trying to remember why I opened that window, but just staring at the window. Staring at my phone. It's weird. I don't know what it is. I hope it's not anything serious, but so that's having an impact on me as well. And I'll tell you this, there's another side of me. The world is getting so ugly and so toxic that I don't know if there's a turning back. I don't know. Tammy says, I know fundraising is huge for politics, but the emails from our congressmen are horrible. Tammy, I'll tell you why that is. And I'm not sure what you're referring to about being horrible, but when I was on the campaign trail, if I send out an email and I talked about the evil Marxist, socialist, communist Democrats, then people would send me money. If I sent out an email saying we need to build on common ground so that we can get things done, nobody sends me a dime. We're all so used to being manipulated and played emotionally. And so that's why there's no power anymore in getting things done. There's more power in not getting things done. Because if you got rid of an issue, let's say they got together and they created comprehensive immigration reform and solved the problem. And I believe it's solvable. I published a comprehensive immigration plan that takes into account the desires and wants of both sides building on common ground. But the minute they solve illegal immigration, all their fundraising on that goes away. It's just like with voter ID. They don't want to solve voter ID. There are obvious solutions to voter ID. Both sides want to fire you up. The Democrats want to be able to continue to send emails saying, look at these racist Republicans who just want to suppress the vote with their evil voter ID. And then Republicans want to send their email saying, look at these terrible Democrats. They want anyone to be able to vote. They don't want any security in our elections. That way they can control them and steal them. I mean, how hard can it be to get in a room and come up with a solution for voter fraud or voter ID? It's not complicated. I've presented a viable solution tonight. But they don't want to solve the problems because they know and they've trained us to respond with our wallets when they get an emotional response. And I'm not sure how to overcome that. It's one of those things where I say to myself, okay, let's say I ran for office again. Let's say I ran as an independent in the 4th District. Let's say I run for United Utah Party in the 4th District. How am I going to raise money, Tammy, right? Because my message is not going to be the terrible, evil, dot, dot, dots. It's going to be that the only way we're going to solve real problems in our society is if we find people who are willing to build on common ground and get solutions to problems instead of people who are so desperate to stay in power that the last thing they want to do is solve problems. I mean, there's only a handful of them in Washington now that want to do this. And they're called rhinos or whatever else, rhinos or dinos or whatever. Because they actually will listen to they'll actually find out what the other side wants. They'll actually present ideas that both sides could appreciate. They're considered the bad guy. They're the evil ones. You know, it's just, I don't know. Kevin says, as long as you don't start talking about corn pop at the swimming pool or your hairy legs, you'll be okay. Tammy says, COVID long haul symptoms are real. Well, here's the thing, though. I don't know if I ever had COVID. I got really sick with my wife back in February of 2020. It was everything that COVID is. We both went to the doctor. We were both to the point where we almost went to the emergency room. But this is before we'd ever even heard of COVID. So I may have it. I don't know. David says, I think we are starting to get moderate candidates who want to cooperate and get things done. We have some in our current Sandy City elections. Ali Isom is running as Republican. She seems to be much more moderate. That's from Mary. Yeah, I agree with you, Mary. The question is, will they garner any votes? And what you need to look at is whether or not Ali is raising any money. I mean, I know that Jake Hunsaker, who was running in the 4th District against Burgess, he has a message of working together. He has a message of, you know, civility. And I think he's raised $80,000, which, you know, for a non-incumbent candidate, that's, you know, that's more impressive than most. But you know, his opponent raised probably three times that. And I don't think he's going to beat his opponent. I don't think you can get enough people, Republicans in Utah, to choose that. So I don't know. Tammy says we need to do better. I know. I agree with you, David. I think that things, that times are changing. I agree with you. I don't know if they can change fast enough. You see Evan McMullen running. I would put Becky Edwards in the category, also running against Mike Lee. I had dinner with her the other night, and she wants that same thing. And we had a discussion about how the word civility is now perceived as weakness as opposed to strength. And that you can't raise money off of civility. I mean, that's really sad. We have to wake people up. We have to wake them out of this partisan slumber. And I just am not sure that's possible. I do see little signs here and there, though. Leon says, I mean, I certainly feel strongly about cooperating and finding real solutions, and you're already railing against the evil political parties for manipulating everybody. I am absolutely convinced that that's what they're doing. And as I said, there are people within those parties who are trying to find solutions and common ground. But I think it's pretty clear that that's what the parties are doing. So if we're going to change that, we have to find people who are willing to build common ground. And I think that we have to recognize that the predictions of George Washington about partisan addiction have all come true. And I think it's also important to point out that when I talk about the parties, I talk about elected officials and leadership within the parties. I'm not talking about your everyday people on the ground. They're getting swept up in it. And you'll notice, Leon, that if you listen really carefully, I didn't necessarily blame the parties as much as I blamed we the people. Because once again, why is it that parties don't want to get things done? Because we don't send them money on messages of civility. I believe that in a representative government, ultimately the blame falls on the representatives. And we are in this place, and we do it. We do this everywhere. It's like, I hear people moan and complain about programming on TV. And having been somebody who has been able to see ratings and my whole job was based upon ratings over the years, people will tell you, I would never watch. Like if you did a if you did a poll in Utah and you said, hey, would you be interested in a show like The Bachelor or The Bachelorette? And you described it and everything that happens in this show. Most Utahns would tell you, no, we would never watch that. But it's one of the number one shows in Utah. So people say, how come all the news is all bad news all the time? That's all the news wants you to give is bad news. Well, news, they try over and over again. They try to give you, the fun news story, the feel-good news story. You don't get the ratings for that. You just don't. So it's this weird thing where we've been programmed to be this way, but because we are this way, they have to be this way. It's like people get angry about the internet and only feeding us our own ideology. But that's what we want. We like something. We block something. That's what we want. In every case, the politicians seem to be giving us what we want. Television, news, they're giving us what we want. Social media is giving us what we want. So ultimately, the change has to happen with us. We have to wake up. And I'm here to tell you, back to Tammy's point, that if and to David, if there is going to be a political change to where either the parties snap out of it, and maybe that's an option, to where the parties snap out of it and they get back to trying to get things done, or independents or third parties can have an impact, the answer is money. And this is the question I keep asking myself. If I decided to run again as an independent, would I be able to fundraise and raise enough money? Could I get to people who are typically fired up over emails that call everybody else out and send a message of common ground and get things done and have enough money to compete? My experience so far says no. Let's see. David says, I think she is doing well, but not anywhere near Lee. This is talking about Ali Isom. I think she is counting on ground support. ground support. I used to believe in this thing called ground support. Now I'm a ground support skeptic. The candidates who win elections are the candidates who get max donations from wealthy donors and special interest groups. Those are the ones winning elections. And ground support would be the answer to that. If every person out there said, I'm going to give $20 a month to you during the whole campaign, you would overthrow special interest groups and the wealthy. I keep going back to this lately. It's the Bugs Life movie where the ants realize that they outnumber the grasshoppers. If we could somehow get everybody to realize that the ants outnumber the grasshoppers, that the independents, those who want common ground, those who want civility, outnumber the extremes in the parties nationally, we outnumber them, and decided to support candidates with their wallet, then you've got a fighting chance and you can really create change. But everybody's looking for all of these other solutions to solve their problems, like term limits. No elected official is going to put in term limits. You're going to have to choose differently. And choose differently doesn't mean vote differently. It means get out your wallet and support differently. And until that happens, we're just not going to see it. We are not going to see the change, I don't think. Leon says, what I'm saying is you have a message that evokes an emotional response that should get people to send you money. You are right that we the people are the problem, but that's definitely not a message that will get you money. I know. Yeah, Leon, I totally agree with you. Blame the people is not a good message. The message that gets money is when you blame others.
blame immigrants, blame China, blame Democrats, blame Republicans. That's where the money is at. So how do we change that, guys? How do we change that? How do we get enough people to say, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is? Because I had so many people who said they supported me. I had 20,000 people vote for me in the primary. But maybe 1% of that ever sent any money. And so what happened is the person who I was running against, he keyed in on these special interest groups. He raised enough money to do TV advertising. We were ahead in the polls until that TV advertising happened. And then we were just outspent, and that was the end of it. That was the end of our hope. If we had financial support that matched our ground support, I believe I would be a member of Congress today and making a difference. I may be fooling myself, but that was the whole point, right? Michael says it's a shame it's all about money. Yeah, it is a shame. But I think that we've got to embrace that and realize that if we're ever going to find a way to change it. Tammy says, I assumed you would do well because you knew issues, had solutions, and understood compromise. I don't know anything about Burgess Owens until the fake bomb went off in his yard and drunk driver drove into his campaign headquarters. I'm not sure most of us. I think so too, Tammy says. That was my struggle, and I spent every day on the phone. You have this vision of what a campaign would be like, and you'd be out pressing the flesh and meeting people and doing rallies and kissing babies and all that stuff. No, I spent 10 hours a day dialing for dollars. And I don't know if you know this, but most Congress people, congressmen and women, spend 3 days a week in a call center of their entire time in office dialing for dollars. That's how important money is to this whole thing. Now, that's time that they should be spending, I don't know, reading the bills before they vote on them, speaking to constituents, meeting with the other side, trying to build consensus. They're dialing for dollars. Money controls all of it. And I'd like to say that we need to change that so that we can create change. There's no way to change it until you get money behind other types of candidates. Tammy says that's so crazy. I know. And so that's the absolute reality. So if we could come up together with a way to get enough people to donate $20 a month through the campaign, you could change the world. I really believe that. If the ants could get together and realize they outnumber the grasshoppers, but not by saying I'll vote for you, but by saying I will support you, that's the only way we're going to make a difference. That's the only way Evan breaks through. That's the only way I would break through. It's the only way Ali Eisen breaks through. Because all the special interest dollars and all the big name dollars are with the incumbents. They're with Mike Lee. They're with Chris Stewart. They're with Burgess Owens. And they're not going to risk what they have by supporting another candidate. Because if that candidate doesn't win, then they ticked off the incumbent. So, and that was one of the other things that we heard all the time. Kim Coleman was running and people told me all the time, look, I would love to support your campaign, but we don't think Kim Coleman's going to win, but she's going to continue in the legislature, and we don't want to tick her off by supporting you. All kinds of other weird factors involved that you would never thought would be involved. And then there were other people who were part of the establishment who just said, we can't get involved in primaries at all because we want to go with whoever the front runner is, and we don't want to tick anybody else off in the meantime. You're like, really? You can't just look at the candidates on the table and say, this one is the candidate who we support, who we think will do the best job? And they're like, no. I'm like, okay. All right. So I learned a lot, you know, and that's my question if I was ever to do it again. It's the number one question I get. Okay, J-Mac, then where do you get the money? I don't have an answer. And until I do, I don't know that that makes sense. I mean, I could do it just to have a voice and be a voice of reason and try and make a difference. And I'm not beyond that, because that will and can have an impact. But if we're actually going to unseat somebody, the ants have to get out their wallets. It's very sad, I know, very frustrating. Very, very frustrating. All right, my friends, anything else? We got into quite the discussion there. I wasn't planning on that. Anything else on your minds tonight? I've been doing the Podbean. This has been going out to our Podbean subscribers tonight. They can't see it, but they can hear it. And we're going to continue to add more services. If you're not a member, I think just about everybody here on tonight is a member. If you go to jmcfarland.com, it will really help me out to be able to bring you this podcast or this broadcast. If you go to jmcfarland.com and join the JMAC Members Club, you can come in for free. There's benefits for that. But those of you who have come in at $5 or $15 or $25 a month, and yeah, we have quite a few of those. You get access to my webinars, to my books, to merch, depending on what level you come in at. And that helps me bring this broadcast to you on a regular basis. So please go to jmcfarland.com and become a member of the JMAC Members Club. And if you haven't seen the merch, it's kind of cool stuff. Here's the merch. So you got hats, t-shirts, you got a mask. For those of you who are LDS, I want to create a mask. I've got this plan because I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Many of you listening are. And I'm amazed at how many people in church are still not wearing a mask when you're taught to follow the prophet. And it just so happens that the prophet is a heart surgeon. So I just told my wife, I want to get a bunch of masks and I just want to go up to them and say, hey, it looks like you forgot your mask, and hand them a mask. And on the front of the mask, it says, follow the prophet. What do you think? You think I'll get kicked out? You think I'll start a fight? Look, we got stickers now. They're great for covering holes in walls or furniture, especially after you've punched a hole in a wall because you're so frustrated. And then just some fun t-shirts with slogans and stuff on them. So those are available. There's a link in the description if you're interested. Tammy says she loves it. Leon says, here I am talking about people sending you money and I'm not a member yet. I think you have talked me into it though. Thank you, Leon. Your support goes a long way. And it's what allows me to be able to focus on this. I want to do more of it. I want to do it every day. I have plans, and I've told you about these plans, but we're still in the process. I have the ability to have everybody, all the lawmakers on, all, you know, and interview them. It just takes a lot of time. I think I've finally starting to line up somebody who might be able to act as a producer for me. This is because of your support. So, again, if you like what you're doing, and if I can get enough support here, then maybe that will empower me to go back and run again. When I ran the first time, I had to quit my job on KSL. I don't want to have to give up my support, my family support this time if I'm going to do it again. So you can help me out by becoming a member. So again, thank you so much for joining me tonight. How long have we gone? Oh, about an hour and 15 minutes. I thought we were done a half hour ago. And we just kept going. So anyway, thank you so much, everybody. Tomorrow, I'll be trying out a new microphone. Hopefully, I can get to the doctor and figure out what this brain fog is. But it means a lot to me that you guys join me and that you share your comments and your feedback. So other than that, I hope you have a wonderful night.